I want our organization to be one of the best in the world. You know, we're competing against 31 other organizations, and this is a hard, driving, grinding business. And if you don't have any passion, and if you don't understand your why you're doing this, then it's hard to do it, because it's tough. We do this for one thing, and I've said it when I was hired, to win.
And with that, we say hello. Welcome to Dog Pound Report alongside Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. I'm Hakeem Dermish. Now, before we talk football, we talk about the NBA champion Cavs. Yes. The parade was on Wednesday, 1.3 million people downtown. One of the coolest parts from the parade, Hall of Famer Jim Brown handing the Larry O'Brien trophy to LeBron. Let's take a look back at that moment.
We have to bridge the gap between 1964 and 2016. So presenting the trophy, the Larry O'Brien Championship Trophy, to LeBron James, the greatest running back and greatest football player ever, Jim Brown.
Nathan, start with you. You were at the parade. What was that moment like?
That was unbelievable. And, you know, we talked about it on the radio show this week. What other city could maybe have a passing of the torch of that magnitude?
Yeah.
The best football player
That's
ever, and
really
then one
point.
Of the top basketball players ever. And I came up with Bill Russell to Tom Brady, but I know they'd won titles in between, so I threw it out. So I said, Cleveland wins. Just an unbelievable moment. That parade, one of the most fun days I've had in the city of Cleveland. Just absolute bedlam. Everybody happy. High five and champions of the world. Let's go. It was a great day.
Yeah,
I even saw you, Hakeem.
You even saw me.
That's right. We high five.
Yeah, we did.
And I enjoyed a different perspective being at home, watching it, and I just loved the aerial views. Anytime any station, Channel 5 included, had the opportunity to show the aerial view, it made me very proud that the turnout was in numbers to be so strong. And I love the fact that the parade should have been an hour, hour and a half, but the players truly embraced the four-hour parade, getting out of the cars,
yeah.
You know, when it was hot, high-fiving the fans. It was just so much more intimate, I believe, than any parade I've seen in any other city.
And it was intimate because there weren't any barricades, so people were
right.
Just engulfing the cars and the parade floats. And it was cool, too, from the Browns' perspective. You saw Ernest Biner, Bernie Kosar, and, of course, Jim Brown there, and the fans just swarmed their cars. And it was just a really surreal moment to see them, these legends in Cleveland, now celebrate the Cavs. It's just a cool moment to really be a part of.
It was phenomenal. And Bernie was on the float with MGK, which is when you think MGK, you obviously think Bernie Kosar. And so MGK is up there rapping, hanging from one of the streetlights, and Bernie's up there waving. I'm like, this is... You got to have it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a great, great, surreal moment. And I love, too, in LeBron's speech, and I know people took issue with the language. Get over
sure.
it. But the fact that I felt... like you were just at home with LeBron, and
yes.
that's how
yeah,
he really would have been talking.
Correct. Yeah, you're in the locker room.
Yeah, and that was a real look at him. For somebody
mm-hmm.
who's so polished to get that kind of real look and the jubilation, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was unfiltered. All right, when the Browns won the NFL championship in 1964, there was no parade, but perhaps one day we'll have one for the Browns.
Make it so.
Meantime, training camp opens up in about a month, and let's talk about some of the free agents the team has brought in this offseason, RG3, DeMario Davis, among the notable. Who stood out to you, Matt?
I would have to say... I'll say both RG3 and DeMario Davis,
okay.
One offense, one defense. I think RG3 has been the first guy to walk on the football field at each and every practice with Hugh Jackson in this offense. So I would say that he is the starter until someone can beat him out. Now, he is still refining his game. I know people talk about his ability to get rid of the football, also make smart decisions and not take those hits. But what I love on the other side of the ball with the signing of DeMario Davis is he brings that jet defense mentality
yeah.
here to Cleveland, something that we've been missing, that thumper. He's been, you know, the leader of the huddles. He's been breaking down the huddles. He's a voice that you hear very clear out on the practice field.
Let's talk draft picks here. The Browns have signed 13 of their 14 draft picks. Joe Schobert, the latest to do so. Carl Nassib, the only one that we're waiting on at this point. Just your takeaway, what you've seen from these guys.
You know, I think it's a very exciting rookie class, and it's good to see them out there because they're embracing the culture. They don't know any different in the NFL, and I think they're a part of the reason why things have looked so good. But one guy stands out far and above the rest, and that's Corey Coleman. He has come in and is immediately the best receiver on the field, and at times you think this guy could be the best player on the field for the Cleveland Browns. And at the end of the minicamp, when it wound down, when there was a third down play, they did some real situations, moved the ball. They went to Corey Coleman every single time he got open, caught the ball. He's been impressive. And then Hollywood Higgins, so smooth with
those
hands.
Absolutely. And again, I love this city. In the 15 draft and the 14 draft was wide receiver, playmaker. Well, we finally have our playmaker, a guy that played very well at Baylor, scored a lot of touchdowns. And you can see the excitement in Hugh Jackson's face when we got him, we drafted him. It was, we need to score the football. And I think Corey Coleman will allow us to do that.
Training camp kicks off Friday, July 29th, and Hugh Jackson has made it clear camp is going to be tough, and it should be. Here's Jackson getting ready for his first training camp as Browns head coach.
You got to teach your team how to play football. And that being said, it's also about being smart. You know, we got to be smart because we don't want to get any guys injured. We're not trying to do that. But I don't know any other way to get better at playing football other than playing football the way you truly play football. And I think I've broached that with our players. I think they understand it. And I think they're accepting of it because, again, at the same time, they understand it's what it's going to take to get us to where we need to be.
We saw a few years back Hugh Jackson in Hard Knocks. We saw a little taste of what perhaps training camp will be like. What do you think training camp is going to be like under Hugh Jackson here in Cleveland?
I think training camp, at least for the padded practice, is probably going to be like a training camp practice that I'm used to, an old CBA practice where you're going to be out on the field 2.5, 3 hours. There's going to be the 9-on-7. It's not going to be patty cake. You're going to hear the pads collide, which I think is something that's evaded training camp in Berea for the past few years.
I can't wait for this. And I tell everybody, come out to training camp. Yeah. You're going to love what you see. Because I remember being at training camp last year, and there were so many days off, and there weren't a lot of padded sessions. And you didn't really get a sense that this team was building to play football. I know you were unhappy. I remember there was a second-year undrafted free agent who was given a Veterans Day off, and you're like, what in the world is going on? And I watched Hard Knocks last year with the Houston Texans. And I'm like, I didn't see one practice like what Bill O'Brien is doing with the Texans down there. So this year, we're going to see that. And I like what he said. The only way to get better playing football is playing football, and we're going to see that in training camp.
Orange-Brown scrimmage in August at the Shoe in Columbus, the Orange and Brown scrimmage. What's that going to be like for the young guys playing in front of all these fans? Because you know that place is going to be packed.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I mean, for a creature of habit, the opportunity to get out of Berea and go somewhere else and make it feel different, it will set the stage for these young players, as you mentioned, to really rise up and show 70,000 faithful Browns fan who's traveled both in and around the Columbus area and all the way down from Cleveland to Columbus to show them what they can do. Because at that point, a lot of their playbook is in. You can really go out and make plays and stop the thinking and just go do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's going to be very refreshing in a new setting to allow them what it's going to feel like in front of a lot of people performing on a big stage.
Yeah, and it's like being actually playing football. You're in a stadium, and I think it's a great opportunity for these guys. A lot of them were in the pack of the Big Ten, so they've been in the Shoe before, but it's really more the environment, and, yes. And it's a little real. I remember last year Josh Lenz caught that touchdown. Everybody's Lenz mania was running wild, so it's a fun time the fans get into, and I think the players do too.
All right, the Browns will practice against the Buccaneers during training camp, and that'll happen in Florida before the two teams match up in the third preseason game on August 26th. Here's Hugh Jackson on practicing against the Bucs.
And I think it's another opportunity to evaluate our team, you know, in a different setting, away from here. And, again, teach our guys how to go on the road and prepare and be focused, but also, you know, understand that we're still in an evaluation mode as we start to put our team totally together. And it's always great to compete against somebody else, you know, other than a guy you compete against each and every day. So it gives us another opportunity to see a different team, a different color jersey, a different defensive scheme, a different offensive scheme, and to prepare and also teach these men how to go on the road and focus and get ready to do what we need to do, because we're going to be on the road early, you know, in this season. So it's an opportunity for me. I see it as another teaching moment for our football team.
Yeah, 5 of their first 7 games are on the road. You're going to hear we want to see guys in other uniforms. We should have a counter for how many times we hear that in training camp here. Just what does this provide matching up with another team in training camp like the Buccaneers?
I think, again, after the Orange and Brown scrimmage, it's a litmus test at that point to, again, go against someone in a different uniform, see how your guys travel. You can gauge the maturity of your team and how ready they are for the regular season to actually start. And I think, furthermore, you've got another hungry football organization really wanting to take that next step in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So you're going to get their best effort along with the Cleveland Browns and Hugh Jackson really want to take their big step towards winning and contending in their division.
You know, for me last year, you really didn't have a sense of where this team was until we went up to Buffalo. And a guy like Terrell Pryor looked so good in practice. And then you watch them when these guys don't want to see Terrell Pryor succeed, and he really struggled, and it kind of was an eye-opener. You knew where Justin Gilbert was or was not. Mm-hmm. And they kind of beat the Browns up that first day. And I said, oh, man, we're in a little bit of trouble. So I think this year, the way training camp's going to go, I think they'll be better prepared for that. But as you said, the litmus test, where are we actually in the NFL?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Jameis Winston does, huh?
Yes. Jameis.
All right, still ahead on Dog Pound Report. We'll take a look at one of the Browns' upcoming opponents this season. We'll hear from an insider about the New York Giants, and we reflect on the big takeaway from Browns' offseason. That's next on Dog Pound Report. Back here on Dogcom Report, thanks for staying with us. Akeem Dermish, Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here with you. Time now to learn more about one of the Browns' upcoming opponents this season, the New York Giants. We caught up with Giants insider Paul Dottino to get a sense of where New York is as a team, especially with new head coach Ben McAdoo.
There's really been a very smooth transition from Coach Tom Coughlin to McAdoo. But we have seen a few things at practice already change. McAdoo named some drills after Giants legends to try to give some connection and responsibility to these young guys to the Giants heritage. There's the SNE, which is an offensive lineman's blocking drill, because he was just a bona fide powerhouse of a blocker who went to four Pro Bowls as an offensive lineman here, and of course a two-time Super Bowl champion. And then there's the drill known as the LT, which, of course, is a tackling technique drill. I don't think I need to explain that one at all.
All right, Paul, thanks. So Ben is kind of doing what the same thing Hugh's doing. He's kind of integrating the history of the organization there with the Giants.
Which is smart. It's a proud history. And obviously, Eli, you have a quarterback there who's won a couple of Super Bowls for you. McAdoo goes from offensive coordinator to head coach, so kind of a seamless transition. He's helped Eli really increase his completion percentage, and now he's going to kind of oversee the whole operation. He was a guy that was considered a star as the quarterback's coach in Green Bay, made it there as the OC, and a guy that's on the rise. It'll be interesting to see how they acclimate to him this year.
All right, let's keep the conversation going. Here's what Paul has to say about former Ohio State cornerback and Giants first-round pick Eli Apple.
They love his willingness to accept criticism and to listen and to not make the same mistake twice. So far, what they had mixed results with him, and when he's gone into the slot, which he barely played at Ohio State, he has had some difficulties there. Played better on the outside, but here's the key. He has played better throughout the course of the offseason program. The arrow's going up, and he continues to get better and better and better and better each and every time. That's something coaches like to see. And quite frankly, you know, I think Eli Apple is going to be a significant part of what the Giants secondary does this season.
And when he showed up at his first day of practice, who brought him to practice? His mom. How about that?
She's a star.
Wow.
A momager, right? And it seems like a lot of Ohio State Buckeyes, I think Darren Lee included, have a momager managing, you know, who they are and what they do, keeping them in line. But I think when you look at Eli Apple, I know a lot of people, you know, yourself and myself included, were very surprised how high he went. You know, taken off the board inside the top 10 by the New York Giants. But this is a team that, you know, has ridden Eli's back for so long that they needed to go defense. They need to stop somebody, especially in that division with Romo back and Dez back at wide receiver in Dallas. And I think Eli Apple's a guy that comes from that Urban Meyer tree with, like, molding them into these great players, as we saw a lot of them get drafted this year. And I think the same thing's going to be said for him in the New York Giants uniform. It may be a little bit of adversity early, but eventually he's going to grow into that starting role as the season goes on.
Giants went 6-10 last season. So what are the expectations for the Giants heading into this season?
Right now, there's probably more optimism this spring than probably the last three or four springs that I've been around this team. They believe they have upgraded their talent across the board, and they really believe that that combination of the additions with Steve Spagnuolo will greatly enhance what was the last ranked defense last year and is going to bring them way up in the rankings. You combine that with a top 10 offense, there are a lot of people around here in that Giants locker room who believe that they are going to be a playoff team.
And with all due respect, everyone's a playoff team in the NFC East, okay? Let's be honest here. Not everybody's a playoff team in the AFC North. I mean, this is a change here from the Giants and the Browns situation as far as playoff teams. But you look at the Giants, what do you expect from them?
My expectations are for them to compete. I think that as we sit right now, Washington represented the NFC East in the playoffs last year. But as I mentioned, Dallas gets Romo and Dez back. They've got Ezekiel Elliott. They've got that offensive line, and they've added defensively as well.
Look, Philadelphia, I think, is the only kind of basement dweller in that division right now. The Redskins coming off. Good for us, right? We'll enjoy that top five pick. Thank you. The Redskins, I mean, who's afraid of Kirk Cousins? Let's be honest about it. We'll see if he can do
it. You like that?
Yeah, you like that? You like that? I think the Cowboys and the Giants, I think it's going to be a two-horse race in that division. They're going to put points on the board. They made all the big splash. Olivier Vernon, you draft Apple 10th overall on the defensive side, and I think adding Sterling Shepard to that offense is going to be big. They're a very complete team because you have the suspensions with Dallas. Romo's coming back from the injury. Can he stay healthy? I think they probably are, in my mind, the favorites to win that division, but they got to go out and prove it.
Browns and Giants matchup week 12 here in Cleveland. All right, got to take a quick break on Dog Pound Report. Matt, thank you for stopping by. Appreciate it. Up next, Andrew Gribble joins the show to debate some of the biggest revelations from the Browns offseason thus far. We go deep. Stay tuned. Back here on Dog Pound Report, thanks for hanging out with us. Andrew Gribble joins us now. Thanks for coming in. Nathan and Andrew are going to debate some hot topics around Berea. First one, the biggest offensive takeaway this offseason. Nathan, what say you?
I'm going to say the formations. We're seeing three offensive linemen, five offensive linemen, seven offensive linemen playing receiver, guys moving all around the field, a lot of motion, a lot of confusion to set the tone and dictate to the defense, make the defense react to what the Browns are trying to do. The other thing, too, is that they're using a lot of personnel groups. Receivers are lining up in the backfield, running backs are lining up out wide. A lot of things to kind of, as I said, set the tone and make the defense react so they can get the matchups they want and attack.
Yeah, and I think when we saw what Hugh Jackson did in Cincinnati, that's not much of a surprise. I think it's exciting. But what I think is a takeaway for me that not many people are talking about, this team is going to be built to run the football. And
yes.
I think you notice that with the draft, sticking with Duke Johnson, Isaiah Crowell. And I think what you look at that right side of the offensive line, putting in a guy like Alvin Bailey, he just kind of has that physical, menacing presence. And I think that there's going to be a lot of attention directed at the quarterback, the wide receivers. But without a stable running game, and we saw this last year, when the Browns couldn't run the ball, way too much pressure on Josh McCown and Johnny Manziel. This year, you get an increased running game, like we saw at the end of the year against San Francisco. It'll make the passing game better, help out those young receivers and quarterback.
All right, let's move on to the defense. What's been the biggest defensive takeaway this offseason? Andrew, let's stick with you here.
Well, I'm just looking at it's night and day with what the Browns have at outside linebacker, and I think that was apparent the day that Emmanuel Ogba stepped on the field. I think he adds an element of competition and athleticism skill set that really helps out Paul Kruger, who was really just kind of a man on an island last year, not getting much help on the other side of the field. I think we've seen Nate Orchard progress. Saw that at the end of last year. And then the wild card in that group, Barkevius Mingo. What are you going to get out of him? Can he be that special kind of playmaker that we've been waiting to see? And you add in Joe Schobert and some under-the-radar guys, Cam Johnson, and guys like Jackson Jeffcoat. A lot of competition that'll get the best four in that group of the season.
For me, it's an attacking defense, but it does it in a way that I think is smart. They're going to use a lot of blitzes. They're going to confuse you. They're going to blitz more up the middle. 22% of the time, he sent the inside linebackers. Ray Horton is the defense coordinator. Last year was about 12%. So you're going to see more of those middle dog crosses, get the pressure up the middle, and allow those edge rushers to get there. But what I like about it as well is that they're not doing so much, I'm leaving you on an island. Johnson Badamosi, you're going to cover Antonio Brown by yourself with no safety help. They're not doing that. They're giving the guys room. They're giving them help over the top, but they will bring a lot of guys and try to dictate to the offense and make them react, get the ball out quickly.
I think for fans, this next topic here is really, really going to be interesting here. What has been the biggest revelation for you this offseason? What has really stood out here for this team?
Well, since I'm going to win this one because I have support from another member of the Cleveland Browns, I'm going to say Terrell Pryor. The development that he has shown from last year to this year is astonishing. This is a guy that's come out and looks not just like a wide receiver, but like a good wide receiver. And I'm very intrigued to see what happens when the pads come on. But, Gribbs, what did Hawk say when asked about Terrell Pryor?
Just two words, mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing. That's how much progress he's made. This is a guy I think has an opportunity to really be a contributor, and that is not anything I expected going into the offseason.
I'm kind of building off your point and kind of speaking of the group as a whole and including the tight ends. The Browns have gone all in with youth at both of those positions, maybe to a level that we didn't expect just a couple months ago. And I think it stands out with four drafted wide receivers. You have a veteran with Andrew Hawkins, but you let go of a guy like Brian Hartline. Travis Benjamin went away in free agency. This is a young, young group that could feasibly have four rookies on the active roster when the season starts. And then you look at tight end. You have Gary Barnidge,
yeah,
and then a bunch of guys who have really not seen the field much in the NFL. E.J. Bibbs was on the field for a little bit last year, had one catch, but not a ton of experience. He's probably your front runner right now as the number two tight end. So a lot of trust and a lot of belief in this talent at that position.
You mentioned Gary Barnidge. Perhaps Terrell Pryor has a breakout year like Barnidge does.
Right. Who thought that Gary Barnidge was going to be that a year ago? No goes. Oh, my God. Jordan Cameron's gone. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Well, Gary Barnidge steps in. It was supposed to be Rob Housler. We remember that. Didn't work out so well. But, yeah, Terrell Pryor could be that guy. Somebody is going to step up, whether it's a Higgins, a Peyton, Ricardo Lewis opposite Corey Coleman, and I think be that guy. But you talked about E.J. Bibbs, a man dear and dear to my heart, Bibtacular. He's been phenomenal. And with Gary Barnidge having that hernia surgery, he got to run with the ones in the minicamp and I think had a very strong accounting of himself. No one will besmirch his good name after
yes.
that.
Great job working in the word besmirch. Thank Very you. Good word. Look it Thank up you. If you don't know what it means. Andrew, real quick, what are you working on for ClevelandBrowns.com?
Listen, we've got a bunch of feature stories rolling out this week, one on Kirby Wilson, the running backs coach, and we're kind of building toward this really slow time of year, but we've got you covered every day of the week.
All right, make sure you look for that on ClevelandBrowns.com. Andrew, thanks. Appreciate the time. Up next, we answer your Twitter questions. We'll be right back on Dog Pound Report. All right, back here on Dog Pound Report, Akeem Dermis, Nathan Zagura. We have time for one Twitter question. It comes to us from Jake in Garfield. Jake says, what veteran may not make the roster of the D linemen, Nathan? So what do we got here?
All right, so we're a 3-4 defense. We're probably going to carry six defensive linemen. I think you can account for five of those six spots pretty easily, kind of set in stone. So you look at the defensive line, the starters, Dez Bryant, John Hughes, Danny Shelton. Dez, in the last year's contract, maybe the best defensive line player we've got. Shelton, obviously, you drafted in the first round last year. And then John Hughes, you signed to an extension last year. Backing up Dez Bryant's going to be Carl Nassib. You drafted him in the third round. He's going to make this football team. Xavier Cooper is going to back up John Hughes, drafted in the third round last year. He's going to make this football team. So the only spot that I think is really up for grabs is who backs up Danny Shelton. You've got Jamie Meter, so not really a veteran, but somebody who's been here for a couple of years. You're going to see if he can make it. But he's got to hold off Nile Lawrence-Stample, a big man, an undrafted free agent out of the SEC. So that's really the battle I'd look for there. And then the other one who's kind of a wild card is Armani Bryant. Now, he can make the roster because he's suspended for the first four games. So they don't have, that doesn't count against the 53, so it could come later. But he's kind of a defensive end, kind of an outside linebacker. We know outside linebackers crowded from Gribbs earlier. So he's another one that I would say is kind of on the bubble because of the off-field issues that he's had and the fact that you don't really know where he's going to play in this defense.
I have a couple questions. I'm going to throw you a curveball here.
Do it.
Of the Browns rookies, which Browns rookie's mom would most likely drop them off to training camp?
I don't know if there's anybody that's a star like Eli Apple's mom. I mean, she dominated the draft coverage, everything like that. But I'll go Corey Coleman because yeah. I know he's very close with his mom, and so I'm going to go with Corey Coleman.
All right.
But I don't think any of them are going to be dropped.
No, probably not. It's
yes.
not going to happen.
The answer is probably none.
Yeah. All right. Use the hashtag AskDPR. Maybe next time your question will make it on the show. That's going to do it for this edition of Dog Pound Report. For our entire crew, I'm Hakeem Dermish. Thanks for watching. We're taking a 2-week break here on Dog Pound Report, so we will see you just in time for training camp. Thanks for watching. Have a great Sunday. Congratulations to the Cavaliers. We're going to celebrate a title tonight on Ford Sports Sunday. See you next time.